Before we begin, everyone do me a favor. Thanks. Read a little thing I wrote called The Federalist Papers. Yeah. I explain how a nation's unlikely to survive without a strong central government to keep it alive. When I launched the central bank, Jefferson called me ill. Now you have my face to thank on every $10 bill. When America was cash-strapped, I pushed past that. Now some sicko makes crypto, and our nation backtracks.
Decentralized currency, yes, I invented it. I'm sure many governments wish they had prevented it. The national cash is how they keep control. But freedom to the people was my ultimate goal. Yeah, my estimate, a group of men, it doesn't even matter. Nope. I invented Bitcoin because fiat is a disaster. A man from Japan or a damn hologram. I'm the reason open season on crypto began.
Well, good afternoon. It's the Tokens Radio Show. It's Sunday, November the 24th. I'm Christy.
I'm Linda.
And we're broadcasting from the KCNR studios in Redding, California, here on the dial at 96.5 FM and 1460 AM, and streaming online at KCNR1460.com. Follow us on X for updates and commentary at Tokens Radio Show, or if you want to send us a comment, just, send it there. We'd love that. Oh, my gosh, what a week.
Yeah.
What a week as far as Bitcoin's concerned.
Toot, toot. I'm telling you.
Yeah.
It's a hot topic amongst many people now.
It's almost kind of like a letdown because, in case you haven't heard, Bitcoin achieved all-time highs this week, breaking the $99,000 barrier.
Yep.
We're all waiting for that $100,000 party. Hasn't happened yet, but we're pretty close. The $100,000 benchmark, it's right here. And so what's next? What comes afterward? So we've got you covered with some great content.
Yeah,
before
we
get started, we're going to have a market update and a word from our sponsor.
All right. Currently, Bitcoin is a little over 97,000. IBIT ETF. Oh.
It's missing.
I'm not sure. I'll get back to you maybe on that. ETH is at 3,339. XRP is $1.41. MicroStrategy is 4.21. So then we got Polymarket. Who will Trump pardon in the first 100 days? We went through this before. Polymarket right now, J6ers, I can get it out, 82. And Ross Ulbricht is 72. Yeah. So there you go with that.
And IBIT's at 56.
Okay, IBIT's 56.
Sorry about that.
You know, crap happens. That's just the way it is.
I told you where my head was today.
Yeah, well, the important thing was we got Bitcoin in there, and I mean, we are watching it like by the minute, seconds and stuff, so.
It's on the way up.
Yeah.
There were a lot of red arrows today, and they're starting to turn green.
Yepers. It's gone up like over 40%, I believe, in the last week.
Yeah. It's incredible.
Yeah. So, today's show is sponsored by our friends at the Queen of Dragons, home to Pinnacle Cultivators. Their carefully cultivated, unique strands offer elevated experience with exotic genetics and robust flavors. The Queen of Dragons is known for fair pricing, stringent quality control, and knowledgeable staff. Stay connected by following at Queen Dragons on X or calling 530-276-9771.
Now, Linda, you probably know this more than anybody else here in the station, is that Americans are spending about $540+ billion trying to figure out their taxes. And it's primarily because of the tax code. It's filled with 10 million words of incomprehensible legalese.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that's like two-thirds of the amount that we spend on our defense budget. I mean, isn't that insane?
Yeah, I believe it was Einstein said that it was the most complicated thing there was the income tax.
What happened to our postcard that we're supposed to get?
Oh, well, that was a long time ago. You're not supposed to remember that, you know? You know, it was only supposed to be temporary, too. Well, you got to forget that one, too.
Oh, my goodness.
And it's voluntary. And forget that.
So true, so true. So maybe, Trump has been floating the idea that maybe we'll just get rid of the income tax and just do tariffs, which would be great, right? And that would allow you to retire.
I would love it.
Yes, there you go.
All of us would love it.
Yes,
people don't
realize,
they go, well, we wouldn't have any money. No, we would have plenty of money.
Yes, you got to study up on your history if you think income tax is what keep the economy going.
Well, just stop and think. What you pay tax on, or should I say, what you don't pay tax on.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, you know, probably one of the best ones you could put a snarky spin on all of this is economist Peter St. Ong. And we have a clip from him talking about this. And
all right.
Only as Peter can. So here we go.
The American people spend over $500 billion per year defending themselves against the IRS. That's spitting distance from the $800 billion the Department of Defense spends protecting us against foreigners, well, failing to protect us in the case of the border. So forget Ukraine, forget ISIS. The calls are coming from inside the House. The number comes from my base colleague Richard Stern, who reports on a new Tax Foundation study that the income tax costs Americans $546 billion per year in compliance alone. Compared to our national defense budget at $849, which is supposed to protect the American people, yet completely fails to protect us from the IRS. Note this, $546 billion is on top of the $4.9 trillion they actually took from us in taxes. And, of course, it is separate from the economic impact of taxes, which might add another $15 trillion in lost income. Breaking it down, the 546 is made up of 7.9 billion hours Americans spend complying with the tax code, which at 10 million words is the length of 21 Lord of the Rings trilogies, all made of pure legalese. Of course, nobody actually understands the tax code. That's why big corporations hire tax lawyers at $500 an hour. But regular Americans, many of whom cannot name a state thanks to government schools, are assumed to have completely mastered the entire 10 million words of legalese, or they will throw you in a cage. That's equivalent to nearly 4 million Americans working full-time and without pay, doing nothing but tax paperwork. That's the population of Los Angeles. It's also 46 times the workforce of the IRS, meaning for every tax bureaucrat we pay to steal from us, another 46 Americans have to spend their evenings and weekends helping the IRS steal instead of playing with their kids. On top of the hours, Americans spend another $133 billion a year out of pocket on things like tax software, so that's about $1,000 per year per household. So you could have bought groceries, instead you bought TurboTax. Note, 546 doesn't begin to estimate the cost of the IRS. I mentioned in previous videos, studies estimating that we lose $3 in production for every dollar taken in taxes, since taxes discourage production. So why work, why build or expand a business if the government is just going to take it? That suggests the $4.9 trillion in taxes the IRS actually does take are costing us roughly $15 trillion in lost output. So $546 in compliance, $4.9 in lost taxes, $15 trillion in lost output. Rarely have so few taken so much from so many. For perspective, that comes to roughly 8 times what Americans spend on housing. It's 10 times what we spend on food, all for the IRS. So this night's brought to you by Unchained.com. A constant theme in our administrative state is spending trillions protecting us from threats that are not real. Ukraine, climate, transphobia. While it ignores the threats that are very real, from inflation to street crime to predatory taxation, that forces us to run on a treadmill until we are 70. Between Trump's promised tax cuts, Elon's spending cuts, and slashing the administrative state that strangles the economy, we can see light at the end of the tunnel, but there's a lot of special interests, from uniparty politicians to millions of parasitic bureaucrats who desperately want to keep it going. Okay, we'll be watching. See you next time.
Wow. So, David, well, we were talking behind the scenes here before we came on air, and by the way, we did not acknowledge you, David, and I apologize. We welcome you here, and thank you for producing our program today.
Thank you.
Glad to be here. Thank you, guys.
So sorry about
that.
It's an honor. So selfish of us.
No.
But in any case, we were talking off air about the affordability aspect. Did this offer any insights onto why it is so incredibly expensive to not only live here but anywhere in the country? Could just be because we're spending 2/3 of our income to maybe deal with tax issues in a weird about way.
Yeah. If I look at how much is taken out in taxes, I could have used that to buy the $8 eggs.
There you go. Yeah.
Something like that.
Yeah.
And add some change left.
Yeah. No kidding.
Yeah.
So are we really getting the bang for the buck? Because if you look at all of the military equipment that we buy, right, for the billions, nearly trillion dollars that we're spending, I don't feel that we get that in government services. If anything, we get government disservice.
Well, especially when we give the equipment away to other countries.
That did not happen. That was a gift.
I know.
Doggone it, Linda. We have talked about that many times.
I know.
It is a gift.
You keep telling me that.
Yeah,
I'm just not learning.
I'm not learning.
That gift that we took to Iran, the cat.
Yeah, that one.
Well, that was another gift.
Oh, a gift.
Yeah. That gift, yeah. We just keep on gifting.
We keep giving away our hard-earned tax dollars here.
Yes, because
anyway,
we love it.
Yes,
we love it.
That's a slight digression.
Plane rides for quote-unquote undocumented.
Oh, my goodness.
Yes. Yes, and phones.
And Trump hotel visits and all of that, yes.
Yeah, to the island. And Yeah.
Yeah.
All right. We could go on forever, but all right. With Bitcoin's parabolic rise, we need to remind ourselves about the importance of mining and how it supports the grid.
Yes, indeed.
You know, we've talked about abundant mines before, and we've even had them on the show.
Yeah, we did earlier this year. Yep.
So a mining operation in Oregon, you know, Abundant Mines, released a short video here not too long ago explaining how they are lowering the cost of energy for residents of Cascade Locks in the Pacific Northwest. So let's take a listen to this, because this is an ongoing conversation with people that mining Bitcoin is going to overload the grid. It's going to cost too much. It's not going to do anything for us. So let's go ahead and play this and let you get a take on it.
Yeah, and just before we jump in here, Cascade Locks is very similar to the city of Shasta Lake.
Yes.
It's smaller in population, but very similar because of the dam and their own electric utility. Yeah, so here we go.
Yeah, here we go.
Bitcoin mining, explained simply, is just the process of turning energy into organized computing power, which makes the best money in the world. Abundant Mine's mission day to day is to make sure that our customers can make Bitcoin as passively and profitably as they can. In the larger sense, our mission is to lower the cost of energy for the entire Pacific Northwest. So we believe that Bitcoin mining is the most valuable energy resource and the most effective energy resource that we have today at the lowest cost.
What we do here for the mining aspect of it, and the reason it's important, is because the miners themselves can't really be run at home anymore because they've become so advanced and so power hungry. We need to be able to go through and have places that are dedicated that can have access to that type of power and the security and the infrastructure needed to actually run them. So Bitcoin mining has kind of pushed past being a home mining effort to having groups like us be able to efficiently and effectively run the miners at a secure location.
I think Bitcoin mining is worth doing because now, instead of the control of printing new supply of money belonging to a single group like the Federal Reserve, it now belongs to every individual who has access to energy and equipment and internet access, essentially. And if you are enterprising and efficient, you can actually produce it below the market price that you would buy Bitcoin on the market for. We built this company once I realized what kind of impact Bitcoin mining can have on energy systems. So I think it's one of the most misunderstood stories that people have about this industry and the way that it works, that it's extractive or damaging to energy systems. But in my opinion, it's one of the greatest energy resources that we have available to us, furthering the mission of making energy more affordable for people and bringing energy abundance and prosperity to our communities is what keeps me going.
As we sit here today, roughly 94% of the entire Bitcoin network has already been mined. It's going to be about another 120 years to mine the last 6%. So if you want to have a piece of that, we only have a short runway. We're living through the best moment to still capture it.
So abundant mines can do quite a few things to keep your investment and your equipment safe. A is physical security. All the miners are locked into their boxes. They're all fenced in with barbed wire. We have security cameras. The other is digital safety. So that is making sure that our network's secure, making sure that you are able to access your information in a secure way. And then along with that is keeping the equipment running efficiently. So that is making sure that we have clean air coming in, making sure that fans are working well, making sure that things are clean, making sure that we have the right software running on it, tinkering up and down and figuring out the most efficient processes, which are constantly changing because it is all based on environmental conditions. So that's really what we strive to do, is it brings in all of our professional experience to be able to create an efficient system and a safe and secure system.
Through working with us, customers can finally have a reliable and passive stream of the world's best money, and that they can have that all while impacting our grid systems in a positive way and actually enabling energy sustainability far into the future.
One of the most important things that we have is an on-ramp and an off-ramp between Bitcoin and traditional finance markets. One of the biggest things that people can do to offset their income in the mining space is to purchase equipment and deduct it against their business. And the opportunities that mining has is it's all deductions up front and you get paid in Bitcoin.
Abundant Mines can affect the community by just helping with all of the energy. So there's a dam not far from us and that dam provides the energy for the entire town. And if we can help bring additional energy to the town, it's going to just benefit everyone within the town because we are reliant upon energy more than we know.
Like a lot of other towns in the Pacific Northwest, it used to be a mill or lumber-based industry, which left in the late 70s, early 80s, and for about the past two decades, it's been pretty depressed. And the goal as a city, who happens to also be its own electrical utility, is to keep that cost as low as possible. So the city has done everything it can to keep the electrical, sewer, and water rate down as much as possible to ease the burden on our depressed community.
Right now, large groups for Bitcoin miners go in, they'll establish a 200, 300, 400 megawatt site in the middle of nowhere, and it becomes burdensome on the community. With no goal of trying to go through and give back in a way that can be impactful to the community. The goal here at Cascade Locks is to become the largest buyer of power. And what that will do is allow the city of Cascade Locks to go through and work with the power supplier, EPA, to negotiate lower prices for the community.
The energy needs and the energy utilization in those communities is small enough and spiky enough where they can't really optimize their energy procurement. So a small facility like ours is already the size of their entire utility demand. So just by being able to add more of a utility base and bring in more tax dollars, more utility dollars, we essentially double the revenue for the city, but we also function as a flexible load. So when energy is cheap and available, we use more of it and pay for it such that the utility can break even on all of its fixed costs.
My ideal vision of City Cascade Locks working with Abundant Mines is to partner with them to build out a full electrical system that they help the City Cascade Locks keep rates down for residents with their flexible load system, helping keep our costs down during power spikes when power demands are going up, helping us keep those costs down. But the world revolves around electricity and having electricity we need. Partnering with them to ensure that Cascade Locks has the power it needs at the rate that its residents can sustain.
We actually have the power to make life more affordable for everyone and to actually bring back the prosperity that's in many cases left our region because other industries have been competed out, whether being shipped overseas or to other parts of the country with cheaper input costs. I don't think most people understand that energy is the underpinning base layer of how our entire economy works. And so if you can impact energy systems, you, on the downstream, impact every other industry that exists and every consumer who has to pay for their goods and services. So in the long term, our mission to lower the cost of energy for everybody in the Pacific Northwest is a way for us to lower the cost of living for everybody in every good and service that they may use in their daily lives. So if we can lower the cost of things and make them more abundant, then everybody lives a happier, more prosperous life.
That is how it's done.
Yep.
And we can do that here.
Yeah, and it's just amazing what it would do for people.
Right.
Yeah. Everything is centered around energy.
Anybody who's in public office who might be listening, we have the people who can come and sit down and talk with you. We had one elected official who's ready to take a seat who has listened to this and is interested in learning more.
Mm-hmm.
And we can bring the people to you. This is definitely a doable thing here, right here in our community.
Yeah, because like we've talked before, we have lots of resources.
Yes.
They can be used to do this.
Absolutely.
Yep.
So
I guess with that, we're pretty close to taking a break, I guess, and we will continue this conversation when we return. You are listening to Tokens Radio Show on KCNR, 1460 AM and 96.5 FM, and we'll see you in a few minutes.
Well, we sat down for dinner Thanksgiving Day, bowed our heads and began to pray. So thankful for the food that we were about to eat, but we wouldn't have been so thankful if we'd known that for the next 4 weeks we'd be eating cold turkey. Cold turkey.
Looking for the freshest top shelf flower? Look no further than the Queen of Dragons in the city of Shasta Lake, where they work directly with small local farmers to bring you the finest flower that fits your price. The Queen of Dragons has the best prices on carts, edibles, concentrates, and pre-rolls. Plus, don't miss happy hour every day from 6 p.m. until close and all day Sundays. Don't just stock up on toilet paper. The Queen of Dragons has great deals, so you can stock up on the best flower for the best prices. So what are you waiting for? Stop by Queen of Dragons at 5044 Shasta Dam Boulevard or call 530-238-5638 for details or delivery. That's 530-238-5638. And don't forget to follow Queen of Dragons on Facebook and X at the Queen Dragons for all the latest deals and updates. Support Queen of Dragons, a local business in the city of Shasta Lake, where you'll find the most friendly and knowledgeable staff. Queen of Dragons at 5044 Shasta Dam Boulevard. Visit queenofdragons.com or follow us on X at the Queen Dragon.
Turtle Bay's 5th annual Red Ink Garden of Lights is back for another fun-filled holiday season. Open on select dates from November 22nd through January 5th. Featuring over 10 acres of outdoor illuminated gardens filled with 2 million lights. Don't miss this year's new additions, including new light displays and premium ticket packages. Plus, holiday-themed food, drinks, music, glowing swings, model trains, and much more. Reading Garden of Lights is presented by Mercy Medical Center Reading. Buy tickets now at turtlebay.org.
This is Ted Leidy with Northern Firearms Instruction. Obtaining a California concealed weapons license will allow the licensed individual to transport a listed handgun in their vehicle or on their person in public. For application instructions, training, and other information, contact NFI at 530-999-1822 or visit us online at usgunpro.com. This is Ted Leidy, and remember, it's our right and our responsibility.
I'm Phoebe Johnson, your host, and I'm here with the latest local update. A family's desperate search continues for two missing Chico women last seen near Mount Shasta in July. Dolores Sakamoto, 84, and her daughter Vivian Luna, 64, from Chico, California, went missing near Mount Shasta in July. Despite extensive searches by law enforcement using cell phone records, license plate readers, and K-9 units, no trace of the women or their black 1996 Lexus ES300 has been found. The last known ping on Luna's cell phone was recorded in a remote area near the Mount Shasta Ski Park. The family is offering a $10,000 reward org for information leading to their safe return and is reaching out on social media to keep the search ongoing. Anyone with information about this case is asked to call 911, or if they're in no danger, call the Butte County Sheriff's Office at 530-538-7322. While the search for the missing women continues, another significant issue has emerged in Shasta County as the debate over student access to menstrual product has intensified, with the Board of Education grappling with implementing state-mandated policies. During a recent facilities policy update, the Shasta County Office of Education Board, SCOE, voted 6-1 to comply with California's Menstruation Equity for All Act. The act requires schools to provide menstrual products in all girls' bathrooms and at least one boy's bathrooms for grades 9 to 12. The lone dissenting vote came from board member Arthur Gorman, who raised concerns about potential plumbing issues and liability risks. The policy update reflects scientific evidence showing earlier onset of menstruation among young girls, particularly in impoverished communities. Despite some local opposition to providing products in boys' bathrooms, advocates emphasize the importance of accessibility. Studies suggest that 2 in 5 people struggle to purchase menstrual products, with 38% of low-income women reporting missed work or school due to lack of supplies. In other county developments, Shasta County election officials have tallied over 80,000 ballots as of Friday night, 2.5 weeks after the November 5th polls closing. With many registered voters' ballots counted, key races show Corky Harmon leading the District 3 supervisor race over Mary Rickert. Aaron Resner is ahead in the Redding City Council 2-year seat race, while Paul DeNuca maintains a significant lead in the council's 4-year term race, followed by Mike Latta. The Anderson and Shasta Lake City Council races remain tight, with Darren Hale leading Anderson and Daniel Ringwalski leading Shasta Lake. Countywide, measures P and Q are currently failing. In the Shasta County Board of Education races, Jackie LaBarbera leads Area 2's 4-year term, Teresa Roberts is ahead in Area 2's 2-year term, Michael Orlicky leads Area 1's 4-year term race, and Bobby Simpson leads the Gateway Unified School District Board of Trustees. Beyond political matters, local authorities are taking decisive action on community issues as law enforcement and fire agencies have joined forces through multiple initiatives to address homelessness and fire safety concerns in Shasta County. Community Work Program officers from the Redding Police Department, assisted by the Shasta County Alternative Custody Program, have cleared illegal encampments across several locations, removing an impressive 19,000 pounds of garbage in just 2 weeks. This contributes to over 681,000 pounds cleared this year. Simultaneously, the Shasta Arson Task Force conducted community outreach patrols, connecting with 29 unhoused individuals to provide resources and education about campfire safety. The task force's Operation Spark Arrester also performed 20 compliance checks on arson registrants, finding 4 violations and issuing citations for narcotics, fireworks, and illegal burning. Thank you for listening to your Town Hall Brief. Join the conversation at Shasta Lake Town Hall on Facebook or at Town Hall News on X.
Hey, we're back.
Yeah,
from break. Yeah. Hey, I just have to say something real quick. I want to take my hat off to the Town Hall people because some of the stuff they come up with, it's like, wow, okay.
Yeah. They do dig around and try to report on the underreported stories.
Yeah, and they just report the story. I mean, you know, the facts, so to speak, not weed into a bunch of other crap into it.
Yeah, they pride themselves in getting the bias out.
Thank you. That was the word I was looking for. All right. Excuse me. So moving along. Michael Saylor just presented to Cantor Fitzgerald's Digital Assets and AI Infrastructure Conference right after the election. In this episode we're going to play, Saylor explains there's a plan in motion for the U.S. government to acquire 1 million Bitcoin over 5 years, spearheaded by Senator Cynthia Lummis.
Yes, the Bitcoin senator.
Right. He compared it to the historical land acquisitions like the Louisiana Purchase and of purchasing of California. I don't know if that's good or bad, but he argues that just as those territories secured America's future in the 19th century, Bitcoin could secure our economic dominance in the 21st. He believes it would strengthen the dollar's global position, attract international capital, and help address our national debt. Say it's not true. Essentially modernizing our treasury approach from T-bills to digital assets. That would be really good. So let's just take a listen to his closing statement that he did at this conference. It's about a little over 8 minutes. So.
Yeah. It's called the Red Wave and the Crypto Renaissance.
Yeah. So here we go.
I'm at the end of my presentation, so I saved the best for last. These are my comments on the United States Strategic Bitcoin Reserve. The Strategic Bitcoin Reserve was introduced by Senator Lummis at Bitcoin Nashville. At that point, the outcome of the election was uncertain. If it had been a split Congress, if it had not been a red wave, it would have been a challenge. This was unclear 10 days ago, but today you have a pro-Bitcoin White House, pro-Bitcoin House of Reps, and a pro-Bitcoin Senate, and a pro-Bitcoin Senator that has made her mission to accomplish this. And her bill calls for 1 million Bitcoin to be purchased by the United States government over 5 years. Let's talk about the geopolitical logic. Why will it happen? Why should it happen? Well, first of all, it establishes a fair, equitable, and peaceful system to resolve political differences. We know that Donald Trump's in favor of ending endless wars. It's better to have a business outcome than a military outcome to solve problems. Go back. This supports prosperity and lusher in a Pax Americana in the 21st century. Right? This establishes Pax Americana 21. This is a chance to own the 21st century. Like, the U.S. can own it. You address the deficit with an innovative economic idea and an innovative technical idea. You extract trillions of dollars of capital from the 20th century physical and financial economy. But as the money flows out of physical and financial assets, it flows into Bitcoin, and the United States can own all the Bitcoin. So the United States is the beneficiary of the passage from the 20th to the 21st century. Own the 21st century. This is where all the money's going. You might as well buy it before it gets there. This cements the U.S. dollar as the world reserve currency, and it also establishes a world reserve capital network that the U.S. also owns and controls. Right? The best way to protect the dollar is make sure that we retire the debt and we become rich. The next best way to protect the dollar is to make sure that if anybody ever considers a different capital asset other than the treasury bill, you own it. Well, there's only two capital assets that make any sense. The 20th century asset was the treasury bill. The 21st century asset is Bitcoin. If you own both of them, you can't lose. You can only win. Any movement away from treasuries is going to go toward Bitcoin. The obvious thing to do is just buy it before everybody gets there. They either won't go, and it won't matter, or they will go, and you'll be a beneficiary then too. The other geopolitical brilliance of this is that you're attracting foreign capital to the U.S. from our enemies. People are selling Chinese real estate, Russian real estate, African real estate, South American real estate. Everything in the world, they're selling it, their capital, the securities, the bonds, they're selling that in order to buy Bitcoin. And so everybody in the world, if you had $1 billion and you lived in Mexico, would you trade it for $1 billion in the U.S.? Yes. Would you trade all your money in Cuba or Venezuela or China or Russia for a U.S. real estate? Yes, you would. But you can't. You can't do that, right? It's impossible for Russian oligarchs to sell their Russian real estate and buy Manhattan real estate. But what they can do is buy Bitcoin. When they do, if we own it, we benefit from it. So this is about attracting capital from everywhere else in the world, bringing it to the U.S. where it creates U.S. jobs, U.S. prosperity, enriches U.S. corporations, U.S. institutions, U.S. citizens, and the United States municipal, state, and federal government. Right? You want all the money in the world to come to you. And if they wanted to buy the land, it's like, well, I don't know if I can sell them the land, but they can just buy Bitcoin, and then our Bitcoin goes up by a factor of 100. This is the impact of the Lummis bill. If you crank in the assumptions, if we implement the Lummis bill, well, we're going to overcome and we're going to get the debt under control via good tax policy, good technology policy, good industrial policy, innovation, AI, robots, the like. But as we build the Bitcoin position to $17 trillion, we're going to retire and convert the net debt position to be something which is very de minimis. So, yeah, is this a good idea? Yeah. Why? Because if I'm wrong, it costs nothing. If I'm wrong, it costs nothing. You're paying for it with money you printed, which costs nothing. It's like, it's literally like, it's like a penny on $100. It's like 1, 2, 3%. If I'm wrong, it costs nothing. If I'm right, you solve all your problems. Like, That's an asymmetric bet. Like, I'm giving you a 1,000-to-1 payoff, and you're betting with free money. And you're going to tell me you don't want to take the bet because you're risk averse? You have free money. It's a 1,000-to-1 payoff. That's the Lummis bill. There are historic precedents for this, right? Once upon a time, the Dutch paid 60 guilders for Manhattan. They generated a multi-trillion dollar payoff. 60 guilders. Once upon a time, we bought the Louisiana Territory for $15 million. It's like a third of the country. It's worth trillions. We bought California from the Mexicans. Under duress, I'll note, but we still paid them. They didn't want to sell because they were smart. You shouldn't have sold California. But nonetheless, we paid $18 million. We had a chance to do the deal. By the way, I don't want to sell you my Bitcoin either, right? We paid them $18 million. We got California, Nevada, Vegas. It's worth quite a lot, $8 trillion. And then we bought Alaska from the Russians. We paid them a few million. It's worth trillions. Okay, it's been done before. It's a very simple idea. Figure out where the value is going to be. Go buy it cheap and hold it. You're a nation. That's what nations do. This is manifest destiny. Bitcoin is manifest destiny for the United States. I think the Trump administration understands it. I think Senator Lummis understands it. I think everybody that's behind her understands it. That's why it will happen. This is my last slide. This is the greatest deal of the 21st century, the Strategic Reserve. If we don't do the Lummis deal, if we don't pass that bill and all we do is just hold the existing Bitcoin on the balance sheet, it's worth $3 trillion to the people. If the Lummis bill passes as currently drafted, it's a $16 trillion benefit to the United States over 21 years. If they decide to go double max and they double that, it's a $30 trillion benefit. If they assume a triple max position and they purchase 4 million Bitcoin, it's $56 trillion. And, of course, the deal of the century, maybe the greatest deal of all time, would be the Trump deal. If we go Trump max, which is the rational thing, buy the Bitcoin, it's worth $81 trillion. We'll retire all the debt. We'll be the richest country in the world for hundreds of years, right? It's very straightforward. And the beauty is, the more aggressively you pursue this, the less risky it gets. This is one of those things where if the U.S. does this, every other country has to follow. The Saudis, the Emiratis, the Europeans, the Chinese, the Russians, everybody follows. Every company follows. The 20th century gets put away. The 21st century comes into view. The capital comes out of the rest of the world, flows into the Bitcoin network, which rests and floats right above the United States of America. So will this happen? Yeah, I think it's going to happen. The only question is it going to be a double max, a Lummis bill, a triple max, or a Trump max? And that's what we're going to find out in the political process in the coming 12 months.
Wow, that's incredible.
Yeah.
Yep. So it's just, well, I think the Trump max is the way to go. Didn't you say, David, that Trump was all in?
Yeah, I saw a Fox News headline. It said, yeah, crypto's way up now that Trump says he's going all in, mm-hmm, something like that.
Yep.
You know, people say, oh, we can never pay off all of our debt. Not true.
Yeah, yeah.
Not true at all.
So you have a little ditty there for us to just kind of close this one out on.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, yeah.
We should just enjoy that for a moment.
Here we go. It'll just be a second. And here
we go. Most of the people who are buying assets at some point want to sell the assets at a profit.
People that use fiat currency as a store of value, we call them poor.
You got
there
that?
We go.
We call them the poor.
We call them the poor.
Fiat.
Yeah, that just came across.
We call them the poor. We call them the poor. We call them the poor. We call them the poor.
Yep, we would call them the poor. So Yeah, it's kind of a no-brainer. I like how he says, well, you know, if you could sell your property in Russia and buy Manhattan property, I mean, and take that,
right,
those proceeds, would you do it in a minute? Well, sure you can, but they can't, right? So the way to bring those revenues into our country is to buy Bitcoin. But we have to lead the way. We have to lead the way.
Well,
and I like the Trump max.
Yeah.
Yeah,
but the
trillion.
U.S. leads the way on almost everything.
Yeah. So, makes sense to me. We need to get rid of this debt, and that will change the tax situation, and will change a lot of things for humanity. It will be good.
Yeah, and what do we have to lose? I mean, again, here we go. You know, what do we have to lose?
It doesn't really have a downside to this.
Yeah.
So, well, you know, Bitcoin's reaching the escape velocity point. You know, we're climbing towards $100,000. And, you know, the next step after that is 1 million Bitcoin. You know, MicroStrategy is now taken an aggressive strategy towards Bitcoin and or has taken an aggressive strategy with buying Bitcoin and holding it as part of their treasury. And they're inspiring other corporations and nations alike to join the Bitcoin revolution. And as the discussions of a U.S. Bitcoin reserve heat up, Bitcoin's repricing to millions per coin seems inevitable.
Hoo-yah. Yeah.
Hurley from Swan Bitcoin breaks down the forces driving hyper-Bitcoinization and why owning and learning about Bitcoin now is critical. And by the way, it's not too late to get in. I just can't emphasize that enough.
No.
So let's go ahead. We're going from 100,000 to 1 million,
1 million.
Bitcoin. Yeah. Here we go.
Bitcoin just keeps climbing higher and higher without any real corrections along the way. This is making many new investors understandably uncomfortable and weary that a big drop is imminent. And that may be true. Bitcoin's price action history, even during the short-lived max hype and mania phases, does tend to have several large 20 to 30% corrections along the way. And of course, this is entirely possible, as we begin this hype phase where massive demand is meeting a shrinking available supply. There's also the psychological effect of 100K Bitcoin. Tracking sell orders on Coinbase, there are thick sell walls in the levels as they get closer to 100K. Many never thought Bitcoin would ever reach these levels, even though Bitcoiners have been saying it for a very long time. Just remember, when the price was reaching $1,000 for the first time, Bitcoiners were already saying 100K was the next big summit. Just like today, as it nears the milestone of 100K, Bitcoiners are already talking about 1 million per coin being the next big summit. And again, they're being called crazy for it. What I think many people aren't fully grasping is the scale of the capital unlock we've seen with the ETFs and MicroStrategy, and the frenzy to buy what little Bitcoin is available at these prices. Meaning we could bounce off 100K and correct a bit, but we could just as likely break right through 100K and keep going. Market analysts think the latter is more likely. The 7-month price consolidation we saw leading up to this massive move was extremely telling for what could be coming. As the price continues to gap up at the rate it has been over the last couple weeks, demand from an institutional investor level has been increasing. The ETFs and MicroStrategy flow data is a perfect example of what's happening here. We are first seeing institutional FOMO, which will inevitably lead to mass retail FOMO, which is historically when Bitcoin starts to approach a cycle top. So we could see the price break through 100K and gap up very quickly to 120 or 130K, which could then increase institutional FOMO and spark retail to start chasing the price up. And that's when we can start to see face melting moves up that usually characterize cycle tops. But what about the giant elephant in the room of nation state FOMO? As we've talked about a lot over the last few weeks, the U.S. government under a Trump presidency is eyeing the potential of buying 1 million Bitcoin over the next 5 years. Senator Cynthia Lummis, who's responsible for putting forth a proposal for a U.S. strategic Bitcoin reserve, talking about how the plan could be implemented without even printing any new money.
The proposal that I have and that President Trump has discussed about a strategic Bitcoin reserve or strategic Bitcoin stockpile, where the United States would acquire and hold Bitcoin for 20 years. Because of the way that Bitcoin has been appreciating since inception, this would be an asset that could help shore up the U.S. dollar as the world reserve currency and serve as a reserve that could be used to reduce the national debt significantly. You know, the American people are still hurting from inflation, from high prices, and they want the national debt reduced. These are ways to do it with an asset that is immutable, can easily be held by the federal government in a variety of vaults, and that states can participate in as well. So this is the gold standard digital asset, and a strategic Bitcoin reserve is the way to embed it.
You know, we got off the gold standard a long time ago. My question is how much you would spend tax dollars at a time when we're talking about trying to reduce costs, how much would you spend on Bitcoin as part of this reserve?
We wouldn't have to spend any new dollars. We have reserves at our 12 Federal Reserve banks, including gold certificates that could be converted to current fair market value. They're held at their 1970s value on the books, and then sell them into Bitcoin. That way, we wouldn't have to use any new dollars in order to establish this reserve. The United States already holds over 200,000 Bitcoin in the asset forfeiture funds. So that would be the initial source of Bitcoin. So no new money spent on this reserve.
Many inside the Trump cabinet see the very real possibility of this happening in the first few months of Trump's presidency. And as original Bitcoin developer Adam Back said in a post on X, a U.S. strategic reserve is when we see Bitcoin go from six figures to seven in the blink of an eye. Michael Saylor, why the U.S. Strategic Bitcoin Reserve is almost a no-brainer from a U.S. prosperity perspective.
As Senator Lummis, Cynthia Lummis, has put forth the proposal that the United States establish a Strategic Bitcoin Reserve, it's a brilliant idea that she's presented to the Senate. The geopolitical logic here is simple. It's go where all the money's going to go and buy it first. And so if you knew that everybody was going to move to Manhattan and you could buy 20% of Manhattan in 1650, mm-hmm. it would be a good idea. Mm-hmm. But maybe more to the point, the British came to the New World and they grabbed the New World, and that's what created the British Empire. So the United States runs the world's reserve currency, but Bitcoin is emerging as the world's reserve capital network if you just want to keep your money forever. And everybody in the world loves that idea. I'd like to just keep my money forever. So the smartest thing for the U.S. to do is to buy up as much of that as they can. So you buy a million coin, that's 5% of the network. Buy 4 million coin, you got 20% of the network. Why not buy 20, 25, 30% of the network? If you buy the network, you can buy it for money, which is effectively free. In fact, you could just sell the gold, swap it to Bitcoin, and then as Bitcoin becomes a $200, $300, $400 trillion asset, right, you're sitting on a anywhere from $40 to $80 trillion gain. And so the logic of this is pretty clear. First of all the foreign capital in the world is going to be drawn into the Bitcoin network. So if the United States owns it, then that's like the same as the money coming to the U.S. You're just drawing capital from Russia, from China, from Africa, from South America. It's going to come to the U.S. on the Bitcoin network if the U.S. owns it. The second logic is all the capital from the 20th century is stampeding into the 21st century. So all the money that was invested in crappy bonds and decaying real estate and warehouses falling down and companies that are going out of business, all that money is going to go into the Bitcoin network. So you own the 21st century. And, you know, the third idea here is right now, a lot of people use U.S. sovereign debt as their capital asset, which, as I just pointed out, is minus 5%. Every business person knows it's not as good as the S&P index. So if people start to swap out the treasury bonds and they start to buy Bitcoin with it, then you would want to own the Bitcoin because that way you don't have to worry about people replacing the U.S. treasury asset with a Bitcoin asset because the U.S. owns Bitcoin too. So this defends the U.S. reserve currency status. It defends U.S. economic leadership. It attracts capital from our enemies. It attracts foreign capital. It actually lays in place a peaceful, equitable solution to working out our differences with everybody in the world that's a business person would appreciate.
So just as Saylor is making clear with how he has expertly positioned his company MicroStrategy, he makes a clear case why a country like the U.S., which is basically just a large governed corporate entity, could also adopt a similar strategy and see their dominance on the global economic stage preserved and strengthened for another 100 plus years into the future. Definitely seems like something a business-minded leader like Trump could come to see as an attractive plan. And this very real possibility is when we see FOMO levels and extreme price moves, the likes of which will send shockwaves around the world. So in saying all this, my message to you is to not necessarily expect Bitcoin to do what it has historically done and try to trade this thing with that expectation. Bitcoin demand is reaching such a massive scale that the gradually phase we've seen over the last 15 years could very well be transitioning to the suddenly phase. which means we're getting closer to escape velocity. And you definitely don't want to be caught in a trader's mindset when that phase shift happens. So don't be like the traders on Coinbase who have set up sell orders leading up to 100K. Remember, 100K may seem like the summit, but in reality, it's just another step along the way towards massive global demand coming up against the immovable object of Bitcoin's total fixed supply. So don't be a seller here. Don't let the institutions, banks, and nation states buy all the Bitcoin. Follow their lead and be a buyer.
Yes. That was good cue there.
Yes. Buy it and hold it. HODL, HODL, HODL.
Yeah, yes. Don't do that. Oh, I can make money and yeah.
Well, you know, there. I'm going to say, having just said that, there is an exception if you're living on a Bitcoin standard. So you are going to spend some of your Bitcoin.
Well, yes, some of it.
But as I think we were talking about Ben Perrin's BTC sessions when he was talking about the Bitcoin standard and living on it, you just have much more discernment about how you spend your money.
Right.
Or your Bitcoin. You're going to be buying more quality type of things rather than the disposable junky stuff that comes from another country and come on big container ships and fill our landfills and all of that with crap.
Right. And you don't have to spend or sell off everything that you have.
No, not at all.
Yeah, you may do a little bit. That's fine. But that doesn't mean you have to get rid of all of it and kind of like get greedy or like what we were talking about off air. Look at China. I wonder how China feels about this now that they kicked out the miners, remember?
Sure. You know, Saylor said something he says so many remarkable things, but he said something not too long ago. He's always bought at the highs.
Oh, yeah, he does say that.
They buy at the highs. And so does that mean that you shouldn't buy now?
No.
Yes, you can. And you don't have to buy a whole Bitcoin. You can always buy $10 worth of Bitcoin.
Whatever you can afford.
Linda was just sharing earlier that there was a guy who was buying $30 a day.
Mm-hmm.
For how long was that?
8 years.
For 8 years. And he's got over 80 some odd thousand.
Let me bring it up real quick.
He has quite a bit of Bitcoin.
Yeah, he went from, I think he started out and put in.
It's a lot.
It's a lot. It's over a million now.
Yeah, so he's doing quite well.
Hey, while you're looking that up. Looks like your first episode was Sunday, December 5th, 2021.
Wow.
So you're coming up on an anniversary.
Wow.
Yes.
So you guys have been saying this for a while.
Yes, we have.
And people have probably been like, I don't know about this.
Yeah,
exactly. Good point.
Yes.
Thanks for bringing that up.
I just want to give you guys props for that.
Thank you so much.
So he bought $30 worth of Bitcoin daily for 8 years, turning $86,000 into $1
million. That is fantastic. See, it's doable. Just a little bit.
$1 million.
Just don't buy your latte.
So that's 10 times.
Yeah. It's incredible.
Yeah.
So Max Kaiser, we have a little cut here.
Yeah, we do.
He talks about, are you too late to Bitcoin? It's just a short little cut, but it's something worth listening to.
Here we go.
I experienced at the halving party in El Salvador. I got a question from the audience from I think it was a 9 or 10 year old saying, is it too late to buy Bitcoin? You are buying it at a dollar. You know, it's at $60,000 or $70,000 and you know, is it too late? And I thought about it for a second and it struck me that actually I'm way, way too early because the world that Bitcoin is creating by the time it starts to get mature and we see what this is all about, I'll be gone, right? I'll be gone. I won't actually be living during the Bitcoin era of plenty. So I was too early, right? The people who are buying it now, people who are getting into it now, are about to enter into a life that no civilization has ever known before. Everybody, you know, pays the price, gets the price they deserve. And so that has a multiple ways you can look at that.
Yeah, I guess we are early.
We are.
Yes, so it is not too late to get in and buy Bitcoin at all. You should get in. You can open up an account like at Swan Bitcoin, swan.com, go to River. I mean, there are a lot of places. You can go to Coinbase. I mean, there are a lot of places where you can buy Bitcoin. We like Swan. We happen to personally use Swan. This isn't a promotion for Swan, but you can set it and forget it, put in a dollar amount that you want to spend. And it will just automatically take it out of your account if that's what you want.
Yeah. And so, just remember, good crypto hygiene.
That's correct. Yes, indeed.
With it.
Yeah, so there's a lot of ways to do it, but just give up that coffee or something that you are spending $6-7 on a day, you know, and add a couple more bucks to it, and then you buy your Bitcoin.
There you go.
Yeah, for sure.
And I think we're just about at the end of the show. I want to wish everybody a happy Thanksgiving and be safe, but enjoy.
Yes.
Enjoy the food. So
absolutely.
There you go.
See you next time.
All right. See you next time.
And there's plenty of room for all. Well, Satoshi Nakamoto, that's a name I love to say. And we don't know much about him, but he came to save the day. When he wrote about the way things are in the way...
The news from Town Hall is brought to you on KCNR Shasta Reading by Shasta Regional Medical Center. Your life, your health, your choice. Shasta Regional Medical Center.